Bears Robert Crane, a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure technical specialist, PowerShell extraordinaire, and IT consultant, helping people move to the Microsoft cloud and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane. It's all about the Microsoft cloud.
Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast update. This update, I've invited along Mark Keane to give us some insight into some Azure stuff as well. Mark, welcome.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
Not too bad. So let's spread some news about Office 365 and Azure. So what I'll start off with in the Office 365 world is that I've managed to configure the Office 365 Planner into my tenant along with Power Apps. I'm very happy about that. I've got more buttons, more icons in my app launcher, but the planner currently is in trial, which means that you can sign up, you get a lot of licenses to fiddle around with. The go-to-market date is probably June, July. If you have an Office 365 tenant that is on first release, you can certainly go through and configure that. You will normally get an email from Microsoft, but if you want to force that and basically take that up quick, more faster, I'd suggest you have a look at the blog post that I've got, and I'll link to in the show notes. That'll show you how to get that option much faster if you do want to have a look at it. But I think the Office 365 Planner is going to be a great tool because it sits sort of in between. At one end of the spectrum, you have basic SharePoint tasks. At the other end, you have full-blown Project Online. So I think Office 365 Planner sits very nicely in the middle and leverages the Office 365 Groups technology. So for me, that's sort of the first thing. What about yourself, Mark? What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, so I'm seeing a lot about Azure and obviously the people. It's a never-ending story of getting people to consume it. But I think a lot of the talk about in the market is the thing called EMS. Which is not totally Azure. It's a group of things, and part of it is identities with Azure AD. A lot of it, there's some other part of it is MDM. And also too, people have bought it, a lot of people, but there's been hardly anybody that's consumed EMS or using it. So, I'm not too sure why, because it's actually quite a good product.
Why people don't use it is because it's an Azure product. And again, unfortunately, many people shy away from Azure because it's a big bad thing that they are all scared of and haven't used. So
don't understand what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, I'm doing a lot of work with EMS at the moment to obviously get the word out to people. So again, follow the blog and stuff I write. But The four tenants of it are Azure Active Directory, Microsoft Windows Intune, the Azure Rights Management, and the Advanced Threat Analytics. So in a nutshell, Azure AD Premium gives you some advantages like the ability to write back passwords from the cloud to your on-premises, some additional features around the single sign-on portal. The Windows Intune allows you to manage the devices, so desktops, mobiles, the applications, you know, where the corporate data is. I think the big sleeper, honestly, is the Azure Rights Management. So the issue we've got today is many people, businesses are sharing documents outside their organization via email, USB sticks, downloading. But the problem is that typically the documents have had permissions associated with them when they're on a file share. Now, when the document is moved or sent via email, those permissions don't follow the document. What Rights Management effectively allows you to do is to embed the permissions into the document, so when you send it to someone, only that person can open it, and you can control basically what's done with that document. You can see when it's opened, you can see who it was forwarded to. So I think that's the real sleeper. If you're a techie, I would suggest you have a look at Advanced Threat Analytics, which basically is a monitoring tool you put on your network, and it will look at the authentications from an Active Directory, and it will tell you when people are trying to launch well-known attacks, escalate privileges, and it will do machine learning to say, oh, that's interesting, you've logged in successfully once in your desktop in Sydney, but now you've tried to log in unsuccessfully five times on a mobile device that's in a taxi in Beijing. So it uses machine learning to throw that sort of up. So it is really a great product and extends a lot of features and functionality, and I certainly would recommend people get into it. So that's what I recommend.
So with that, I just want to quickly go back to the rights management thing for a sec. I was having a play with it recently, and I encrypted one of the documents. It's quite interesting because it seriously does encrypt it, because it was quite a simple Word document. I just typed a few paragraphs of text. I then turned it on. I then opened that document in Notepad, which can pretty much open anything. I had a look, and it was just a whole bunch of gobbledygook encrypted text. And so obviously, to decrypt that, it needs to be done online and using, say, an Office application, but also to... It's quite good the way that it does that. So if that document does get leaked, it's just, yeah, encrypted text.
So it uses the public-private key, the well-known encryption algorithm. I think the fact now that you can connect on the internet means that you as a author can do sophisticated things, like you can control the document, you can see who's opening it and get reports on that, but you can also revoke access. So a good example is if you put out a request for tender, that may be valid for 5 days. After the 5 days, you can revoke access to that document, which means once it's expired, even people who used to be able to open it can no longer open it. So again, I see this as a real sleeper, and the good thing with the Azure Rights Management in EMS is that you can also apply this within your organization. So you can apply this rights management within existing file shares, as well as in Office 365, as well as email attachments. And I think what we're seeing is, with the growth of devices and information basically everywhere, there is no longer a perimeter. There used to be a nice little walled garden. People go and sit in the cubicle, and the blue cable connected them to the server, and the server was really the only point of egress. Now definitely not the case. So organizations have to rethink the way that they're managing, securing their information. And again, I think that Azure Rights Management is a really key component to doing that going forward. And when you bundle it into EMS and look at the pricing, including things like device management with Intune, and again, Azure AD Premium provides a huge amount of benefit. It just makes so much sense. And EMS is an easy, cheap add-on that provides, potentially for a reseller as well, so many additional services they can sell to customers.
Okay, one of the features that Azure AD Premium, which we haven't mentioned, is multi-factor authentication. It's super, super easy to turn on. It's literally a tick box. You can do it for every single user in the organization, or you can do it for one user or two users on a user-by-user basis, but it is seriously that easy. I mean, all you have to do is have either a mobile phone with you or a desk phone, which it calls, or you can use an app. I think it sends a code to the app.
Correct.
But also to the thing that I found when I turned my multi-factor authentication on. I was on my mobile phone and I signed into a service which required multi-factor authentication. It obviously, I put my password in as a first factor. It then sent a code to the phone that I was actually on to get in. So I guess in that instance, because I'm already on that phone, it's the two-factor authentication is sort of redundant in a way.
Well, I think the thing is to appreciate is as you get a certain level of functionality with multi-factor authentication, rights management, device management built into a product like Office 365, you get the very basics. But to take it to the next level, you need to have that add-on, which is typically what EMS provides. So for example, the ability to do two-factor is part of Office 365, but one of the features that two-factor adds is the ability to have override. So you can have an override, so for this one instant or this case or this browser, you don't need the two-factor. So again, you get a base level with Office 365, but that real functionality, the premium functionality, you need to add on these additional options, and the EMS option is the way to do it. And again, it's simple things, as you mentioned, is the biggest problem that we have with security. The question that I see out there very much is, a lot of customers ask me, oh, you know, what happens if Office 365 gets hacked? Well, at the end of the day, I think that's pretty rare. The greatest chance is going to happen is someone's going to have a bad password or compromise their password to allow somebody bad into the system. So having multi-factor authentication is an easy way to basically minimize that. Of course, you'll need a password and a potentially a key code from a mobile phone to log in. So again, the great thing about all of this, I think you'd agree, Mark, is the fact that this stuff is now all built in, all the back end's there. All you got to do effectively is turn it on and configure it for your users. You don't have to worry about spinning up servers, installing services, patching this, creating a connector here, doing certificates, all this sort of stuff. You just turn it on and it basically works. I think with that, we really need to get into our episode. Again, I thank Mark for coming on and giving us a bit of an update. And we'll be back to you with the next episode with more news and information around Office 365 and Azure. But with that, let's get into this episode. We have not one, but two special guests on board with us. So we'll kick off with an introduction, firstly, to our returning guest, Mark Keane. Mark, welcome back.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
Not too bad.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too. We're back into 2016. Things are maybe up or down. Depends on which stock market day you look at, I suppose. But always with the cloud and stuff, onwards and upwards is seems to be the order of the day. But what we'll do is, if you just want to give people a refresher of who you are and what you do, you have been on before, but let people know. And then, once you've done that, if you can introduce our special guest, that'd be great.
Yeah, so I'm a Microsoft Azure technical specialist, helping people move to the cloud. It's all about consumption these days, which is a buzzword. Helping people use Microsoft Azure and move from on-premise to Microsoft Azure and get the most out of it.
Cool. All right. And, and our special guest?
Yes, the guest. Okay, so today I thought I'd bring on a gentleman by the name of Reid Purvis from Microsoft. His job title is Data Center and Cloud Infrastructure Technical Specialist. And Reid knows a lot about ExpressRoute. And the reason why I wanted to bring Reid on to talk about that is because ExpressRoute affects a lot of Microsoft, not only Azure, but also Office 365, which a lot of people know about, including the consumers out there. And I know you, Rob, you're an Office 365 MVP, so it does affect you. And Reid Purvis is knows a lot about that topic. So that's why I've brought him on.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Rob. Well, let's get Reid to introduce himself and let everybody know who he is and what he does.
Great. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, fantastic to be on the podcast. I look forward to the engaging discussion. Yeah, so my role, as you said, is basically I help customers understand the value and some of the details around Windows Server and System Center. So some great stuff that we're coming up with soon, which is Windows Server 2016, System Center 2016. And together, that forms Microsoft's current private cloud on-premises capability, and then how that moves to hybrid from Azure infrastructure as a service capability. So as part of that Azure component, I help a lot of large enterprise customers in Australia look at ExpressRoute, because that's kind of a high speed connectivity to cloud. When you're lifting and shifting data, you want that high speed connectivity for sure.
Okay, so obviously an ExpressRoute is a component here that we're going to focus on. So probably the best way to set the ground rules here is to give us a bit of an idea in very basic terms. I mean, what is ExpressRoute and what advantages does it have? I mean, why would you be looking at it to get on board with it? And then the third question is that if I did want to start using ExpressRoute, how do I go about actually making that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. So the key value add that mainly, let me just say, first of all, ExpressRoute is mainly for enterprise or larger commercial customers. So there are kind of three key ways to connect to Azure in a private virtual network. So you want to take a virtual machine, throw it into Azure. There are kind of three primary ways of doing that. So first of all, kind of over the internet, and obviously that has the issues around, you know, key aspects of the internet. Might be some latency, or maybe your ISP has a bad day, or maybe someone in between you has a bad day and it kind of drops out a bit. You have a VPN kind of capability, so that's either point-to-site VPN or site-to-site VPN. And that allows you an encrypted tunnel, but still over the internet. So it's more private. You have a bit more control, but again, you're still kind of caught with this man in the middle per se. Now, if you want to have a direct connection into Azure where you have more consistency, lower latency, more predictability, but also in most governments and Australia as well as large enterprises want an extra level of security and privacy, then you can do that with what's called ExpressRoute. And so ExpressRoute is fundamentally the ability to provide using, you know, various telco core capabilities of TPG and Telstra and Optus and name your favorite telco, a direct connection into Azure so that you can take advantage of the Azure services.
I thought you were paused. I was going to ask another question. So talking about the connections into Azure, so you're talking about the different providers and things. I guess there is different types of, say, network service providers and exchange providers. If you want to sort of go through and sort of talk about the differences, I mean, I think I have a fairly good idea of the differences, but I'll let you explain it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, so Azure is an express route. A service basically started off about a year ago, at least in Australia. It was about 2 years ago in other parts of the world, the United States. And fundamentally, when we started off about 2 years ago, sort of two types. A multi-point, so where a customer might have, you know, 50, 100, whatever number of remote branch offices and stuff. And so they might have used what's called an MPLS network, a multi-protocol layer switching or packet layer switching capability, which is something that Telstra would happen. So you go to a Hungry Jack's or a whatever, and they might run, or a Bunnings, they might basically have what's called an MPLS network that connects all their stores to the head office. If you want to make Azure appear as part of your data center on that network, then Telstra or Optus or your MPLS provider, there are a number of them, basically can connect Azure onto that MPLS network, and that we used to call a network service provider model. The other choice is that a lot of customers might just want a kind of a direct point-to-point link or a direct connection from their head office or from their data center into Azure. And that is what we call an exchange provider model. Now, the cool thing about that is that from a technology perspective, we treated them differently from a billing and a management perspective a little bit. Microsoft, about October this year, changed that model. And the reason was is that we for various reasons of data transfers and costs associated with that, the multi-point environments for network service provider were significantly more costly. And so what we decided to do was to basically level the playing field a bit, and so we've actually now moved to remove the differences, and so there really isn't any differences now from a technical perspective. And what we have is that customers can use one or other, and sometimes, oftentimes, use both. So I have large enterprise customers that connect both. So there's a few large enterprise customers that have multiple sites, but they also want the high speed. So it used to be that network service providers were limited to only 1 gigabit per second bandwidth. Now they can go up to 10 gigabits per second and more if they choose to. And as well, we also have moved to this process called a metered and unmetered, or model for metered and unmetered data. So now, the good thing is, it doesn't matter whether you have multiple sites or one site, or you want to connect them how you want them, you basically have the same model for everybody, which is both much more fair and much
makes
more easy.
Much more simple. Yeah.
Correct.
Reid, what sort of uptake are you seeing with ExpressRoute? Obviously, it's a new product that's been brought to market, and it's an awareness thing, and it has obviously a lot of advantages, but is there any insight into what sort of take-up we're seeing? How many providers are actually using ExpressRoute, or the amount of volume of data? Are we seeing a growth, basically, in this access option to get into Office 365 and Azure?
Absolutely. Tremendous growth. In fact, I think due to the networking models and stuff that are in Australia and our kind of geography, Australia is actually the second highest overall consumption of Azure in the world in terms of Azure Express Route, for sure, and on a per capita basis, we're the highest density of Express Route connections in the world. Fundamentally, we have a country with have a lot of distance, and people oftentimes can't reliably use, you know, the internet for various business services. So there is a lot of network connectivity here from the private perspective. And based on that, what we're seeing is that customers every day now, and this is, you know, we're talking a three, four, five customers a week are connecting up to ExpressRoute right now. And they're basically, connecting their networks into Azure. So to take advantage of, as you said, Office 365, starting Azure storage backups so they can lift and shift that data faster, more reliably into that. And in addition, I will say this, is we also connect customers in both Sydney as well as Melbourne. So we have those two connection points, and that allows customers redundancy in the geography that they want.
Okay, so it'll lead me to my next question quite nicely. So talking about connecting to Azure to make use of all the Azure services and things, if you want to just explain the whole, I guess, global connectivity part where you can connect to a local Azure data center and then you can make use of Azure's backbone and then I think the peerings as well that go on top of that?
Yeah. So one of the big take-ups that we're experiencing here in Australia is Australia being a very distant country from the rest of the world. Fundamentally, we have divisions of customers that have headquarters or main offices overseas, you know, the UK and Europe and North America. And so quite often these organizations have paid a huge amount of telecommunications costs to call that traffic, their internal traffic, back to their head offices. So what we're seeing is that as they move towards Azure, they can plug into ExpressRoute here locally, and Microsoft has a few various add-ons and options with Azure that you can add on a what's called ExpressRoute Premium add-on, and that allows those organizations to leverage Microsoft's global network. So as part of Microsoft Corporation, we've developed a global network infrastructure. Some have told me it's one of the largest in the world, and I don't want to put an exact number on it, but in terms of private networking infrastructure, it's significantly large. And so what we can do is, once customers' data are onto our network securely, encrypted for the most part, if it's on our private links, we keep it secure. And what we can do is then have a quality service, and that traffic can go from, I have a customer that uses Azure services where their head office is in France, but their branch office is out here, and so instead of trying to use their own network and pay for that cost, they actually use ExpressRoute Connect here and connect all the way through to Azure as well as Office 365 in France. And so that transit traffic, if you were, that traffic, the backhaul from Sydney or Australia all the way through to France is fundamentally paid for by us, but we include that as part of this ExpressRoute Premium, and so that tends to be a good value for those customers.
So what sort of the delineation, you mentioned a premium offering with ExpressRoute, what's the main differences between the standard and the premium offering?
Basically, from an ExpressRoute premium perspective, you get extra numbers of connections to various components in Azure. So when you put traffic into private networks, you have a standard has 10 VNets that it can connect onto, whereas premium you can connect up to 40, or in fact, depending on the connection speeds, up to 100 different virtual networks. So organizations might have more VNets. They have more routes. So if you're a large organization, you have more branch offices, you have more routes that you need to work with. And so we have large routing things. A premium is required to connect to Office 365. So customers that want to connect Office 365, there's some extra complexity and ongoing costs there. So we require a premium for that. And then of course, when you're looking at that, we also provide for that backhaul traffic things like international quality of service. And so if you're doing Link or Skype for business calls, as we're doing now, then that traffic has much more quality of service capabilities and prioritization. So we provide a lot of those services included with the premium options.
Okay, so I was going to ask a slightly more technical question, if that's okay, and I'm sure you'll be the one to answer it. The virtual circuit. So I'm seeing here that you can get, depending on what type of network or topology you use, you can have virtual circuit primary and secondary, and then on top of that, you can have either one or three Microsoft peering, private peering, and public peering. If you want to just talk about that for a tiny bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you said, Mark, there's sort of three levels of peering. Basically, private peering is where organizations want to connect their network, their corporate network, and have that corporate network appear in Azure so that they can, you know, have it look like Azure looks like their data center. So they want, you know, most customers start off with saying, listen, I basically have some virtual machines. I want to put them as infrastructure service in the cloud, and I want to make sure that traffic goes back and forth reliably, and they extend their Azure network out that. So from that perspective, that's private peering. There's really no filtering in the between there. We haul the traffic. You use BGP peering between them, and away you go. Public peering is where a customer might want to access some of Microsoft's public services or publicly IP'd services. So these are services which are the services shared between customers. The data is kept separate based on the application. So things like Azure Active Directory and storage and SQL as a service and some of these other things. And so when you're accessing them, you can access them over the public peering. And now the key difference between private and public peering is that there is a network address translation capability in that service that's required for that. And from that perspective, customers need to NAT their traffic from their private IP addresses to public IP addresses so that we can pick up that traffic, and then we respond back. In that case, from a security perspective, customers are assured that Microsoft will never establish a connection or a session from Azure Public to their on-premises. However, once a customer has initiated a connection from their side, like an application calls a SQL database or maybe a backup service calls and puts some storage back up onto Azure storage, we'll obviously respond on that same port channel back. And then lastly, as you said, for Office 365, there is a bit of a bi-directional NAT, so both parties need to access each other through a NAT, both forward and reverse. And based on that, there are some requirements. Link, as an example, or Skype for Business, Exchange, and SharePoint oftentimes will want to connect back on premises. So that then allows for bidirectional traffic, and is a little, again, another level of requirement and security, but offers a lot of great advantages.
Okay, so if you've got a customer who's interested in ExpressRoute and they're looking to get the added speed, reliability, and security you're talking about, it's something that they can implement. Initially, what sort of the first steps they would need to go about to actually get ExpressRoute operating in their business? I mean, is it something they go to Microsoft first, or is it an ISP? Or again, you know, what's sort of the very next step if someone's, you know, suddenly decided that they're really keen on doing this to get that speed and reliability? What's the very next step they should be looking to do as a business?
Yeah, absolutely. So fundamentally, the first thing probably to do is to understand their network environment from a telco perspective. So obviously, all the large telcos in Australia offer an express route connectivity, and a lot of the minor ones. So Telstra, Optus, you know, TPG, you know, name your AAPT, which I guess now part of TPG, as well as a lot of these communications companies, which sort of act as what I in North America might have called a virtual network operator. And so we see a lot of them. There's a few small ones, and I'll just mention them. There's one called Enablis, as well as there's another one I was working with recently. And they basically, so if you have a company that you're working with, they're a good first start. Oftentimes, when you connect to the cloud connection points, we have these express route providers. So there are four key connection providers that funnel traffic to Microsoft that we have a special relationship in there. Equinix, Telstra, NextDC, and Megaport as another option. Basically, they connect directly to Microsoft, and all of these other organizations connect to them. And so Telstra has its own dedicated connection point, but and they can connect either in Sydney or in Melbourne. So talk to your telco. There's a bunch of documentation and stuff online, and then you know fundamentally, then the other aspect is there's a deep partner channel, a number of systems integrators that can help you get started on this. If you're a large organization, an enterprise, and you're probably already talking to Microsoft directly, then certainly call your Microsoft rep because, account executive or account manager, because they can also get people like myself involved. But fundamentally, once you've had that discussion with your network team or the people that run your network, it's all very standard kind of communication stuff. We don't make up the internet in certain new stuff. We use standard, border gateway protocol, peering. There are a few technical requirements you need to go through and make sure that you have some public IP addresses because, we basically need to validate that you are the right customer when you connect to the Azure subscription that you have. And so there's some requirement there to make sure that we authenticate you properly. But once that's done, then the traffic starts to flow and Azure becomes an extension of your data center.
Okay, so I'm going to ask one more technical question, and I think we're going to go back to Rob after that. It's basically along the same lines as what we're talking about is getting in the business and implementing Express Route. But more so for a business perspective, an on-premises, say, company, there's the layer two connections, I think, that are set up, a VLAN ID and a service key, which I think is done through PowerShell.
Correct. So there's actually two ways of doing that. So Azure, so when you set up an Express Route connection at a technical level, you first of all get the actual physical networking to one of the two locations, Sydney in Mascot, or in Melbourne, it's in NextDC's data center, however that traffic gets there. Then from there, you order the cross connection into their Express Route provider, so one of the four I mentioned earlier. And then from that perspective, what the customer does is make sure they order from that Express Route provider the service, so they make sure that side is working. On the Azure side, there is no like list or in the interface a checkbox that you go and necessarily set up. What you do is you go to either PowerShell, or if you're using Azure Resource Manager, which is very new, you set up Azure Resource Manager template. And you initiate the Express Route configuration, and that kind of comes back eventually. Once you do that, you specify who your Express Route exchange or its provider is, so Megaport, Telstra, NextDC, or Equinix, and the speeds and stuff. And it spits out what's called an S key, a service key. And you take that service key, literally copy, and then paste it into the Express Route provider's interface, typically a web portal. Obviously, you've been authenticated there. And then what that does is match up literally the Q&Q tunneling, the traffic for the customer, on their side and the Azure side, and then from there, then you establish the BGP peers, and the traffic starts to flow. So that's kind of the technical aspects of making sure that the traffic that goes from your private VNet to your site and stuff is yours. So we make sure that that traffic is addressed correctly and make sure that it's absolutely yours, because we don't want, you know, the old adage, you know, Coca-Cola's traffic going to Pepsi or vice versa kind of thing, right? It's, we definitely need to make sure this traffic works.
Cool. All right. So I suppose that as we're looking to round it off here, the question I think a lot of people would have is that great information, it's something that is, again, raising in people's awareness of using ExpressRoute to get the advantages of speed and overcome some of the limitations and really, you know, scale up to a real, you know, sort of private network, as we talked about. Now, for those people who want to potentially go and get more information, want to, you know, do see some more videos, read some more documentation, what's the best place or places that they can now start to do some more research to get a better understanding about ExpressRoute?
The first place I send customers is really to azure.com, and azure.com, fundamentally you can go there and look at the menus. You'll see on the products menu, go down to networking, and you can start to read right about a lot of stuff there, so about Azure in general, but on the networking specifically, ExpressRoute, and there's some videos there. They take you through a lot of the value propositions as well as some of the technical details we've discussed. One of the things I just want to also round out, Robert, is that I have a lot of customers kind of mentioned, you know, this sounds like it could be expensive and everything else. And let me just reassure your listeners and audience that it's actually not. Quite often, you look at the balance of the costs of your ISP and that costs and stuff, and one of the reasons why it's really accelerated here in Australia is because those costs relative to the rest of the world are actually quite high relative to the private networking side. So many customers can get involved with a very fast link, a 1 gig connection in a metropolitan area in Sydney or metropolitan Melbourne or stuff for like, you know, $1,200 a month, maybe something of that nature, $1,500 a month. So you can start off with this at a very low cost. So in fact, you know, a 50 megabit connection can go as low as a few hundred dollars a month into Azure. And so if you do have even, you know, some smaller organizations but are starting to heavily use Azure because their model is more cloud-based, you know, you can get a 50 or 100 meg or 500 meg connection for a very reasonable price, and in fact, it might be more economical than doing it over the internet.
And I think that's a very valid point. I think what we're seeing generally in the market is one of the big complaints that I hear out and about is obviously people are, you know, the speed of the internet to access some of these cloud-based services, and the more they use them, the more they become dependent on them, and performance becomes an issue on, you know, the standard connections you see out there, typically ADSL, and people aren't aware that the A in actual ADSL stands for. So again, moving to a more serious investment in the connectivity to, you know, your data center or the data center that you're now working with as part of your business, I think is critical. And one of the things that I would, I suppose, I've found is a lot of customers who have stepped up from that consumer grade home style broadband connection to a, you know, a full commercial connection, and, you know, ExpressRoute is another option there. The differences it makes in the way that they actually run their business, the way they can do things, the how they can get work done is just phenomenal. So again, I 100% agree with you there, and I think that the unfortunate thing is many people do see it as expensive. They don't go in and do the research to understand, again, how to get on board, and then I think once they're on board, they can then scale up because they do find it far more cost effective. So no, that's great information there. And again, I think the Azure portal there, and I'll put the links to some of the documentation in there so that people who follow the podcast can look at the blog post. I'm sure that Reid will send us some information I can make available to people as well. But to round things off, Reid, what I'd ask you to do is if you could just maybe give us a quick overall summary of the benefits of ExpressRoute to a business, and then let us know, let listeners know how they can get in contact with you, follow what you're doing, you know, keep in touch basically on the internet.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, so I mean, I think the big value proposition here is that customers want that high speed, low latency, private networking to really have Azure as part of their data center or as an extension of their data center. So they basically don't see the difference between their data center and Azure, and cloud becomes reality for them. That's kind of where this model is going. So when we're looking at that, I think customers, you know, this adoption is just accelerating. You know, we have several hundred ExpressRoute connections now. I think about 200 customers in Australia with ExpressRoute, and we expect to, you know, quadruple that stuff in the next year. So we're expanding at this, and lots of customers are connecting. And every day I hear somebody's connected up, and basically I wasn't even aware of it, and I was an early person involved in this process for Microsoft here in Australia. Yeah, how they can get a hold of me. I'm not too vocal on Twitter, but it's at R Purvis, at R-P-U-R-V-I-S on Twitter, and on LinkedIn, just Reid Purvis, and my email at Microsoft, if people want to send me something, is Reid, R-E-I-D, dot Purvis, P-U-R-V-I-S, at Microsoft.com. Happy to receive emails. I do have a day job, so I, you know, if I don't get back to you right away, you know, feel free to send me some more. I do have a fairly busy inbox. It's about 9,000 unread emails behind, so it kind of continues to go backwards by about maybe 20 or 30 a day, and so sometimes I need a tap on the shoulder. But yeah, if, happy to participate, and I really enjoyed this this podcast. It's fantastic.
Excellent. All right. So, Reid, thank you for coming. I appreciate your time this morning, and obviously you do have the authority when it comes to ExpressRoute, and appreciate that. And I'm sure we could take this for another 2 hours, but I know we've got lots of things to get on with ourselves. So, again, thanks very much for your time. And Rob, if you've got no further questions?
No further questions from me. I think basically what we'll again do, we'll get those resources from Reid and pass them on, put them on the blog post. I think that we'll let people get on with their day. Is there anything you know, just off topic that you want to cover, Mark, to let the listeners know before we do round off, and again let people know how they can get in contact with you if they want to speak to you about, you know, any questions?
Yeah, look, I think the timing is perfect to get Reid on right now, because currently in my day job, I'm actually helping a company right now move to Azure. They want to move all their on-premise infrastructure to Azure, and part of that is ExpressRoute. So it's perfect timing to get Reid on to discuss that. We'll be getting it out there to the public to listen to it. For the take up, and hopefully it'll demystify a lot of the confusion that people have about the product. If people want to get in contact with me, I'm a more of a generalist Azure technical specialist. Twitter at Mark Keane, so that's M-A-R-C-K-E-A-N, so Mark with a C, yeah. So that's how you can get in contact with me.
Excellent. All right. Well, I thank Mark, and I also thank Reid for their time this morning. I think it's been great discussion and really deep dive into ExpressRoute. Don't forget to check the blog post out that accompanies this podcast. Again, I thank the audience for listening to this podcast, taking time out. And remember, if you've got any questions, you can contact me on the Twitter at DirectorCIA, and the best place to follow what I'm doing and the information that I share with people is via my blog, which is blog.ciaops.com. But with that, I'll thank again the guests for attending, and I'll bring a close to another podcast from CIA Ops. Thanks very much for listening.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.